A massive armada is heading to Iran. It is moving quickly with great power, enthusiasm, and purpose. It is a larger fleet headed by the great aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln than that sent to Venezuela. Like Venezuela, it is ready, willing, and able to rapidly fulfill its mission with speed, violence, if necessary. Hopefully, Iran will come to the table and negotiate. And then he talks about a bunch of stuff about what they can do. They need to make a deal. If they don't, there was Midnight Hammer last time. It'll be a lot worse than that this time. And then we see that those are not just words on a Truth Social post, but we see on the ground there is a substantial amount of combat power has been deployed to the region, not just the Abraham Lincoln combat group, which is now on station. And it's got three destroyers and other frigates, I think, that are along with it. 9 squadrons of air wings that are on board that. And then you see on the map that on the ground there through the rest of the CENTCOM area of responsibility, there's been substantial additional air power and air defense assets have been moved to the region, both in Israel and at the U.S. bases scattered throughout the region. What do you think is going on here? Because it certainly looks like we're getting ready for war.
Let me make a couple points. Just the analogy with Venezuela. What we had this giant armada in the Caribbean. What did we do with that armada against Venezuela? Did we launch a major military offensive? No. We kidnapped the president. A couple hundred people were involved. We were in and out in a couple hours. That was the operation that we executed against Venezuela. What does this tell us about what we're going to do in Iran? Are we going to kidnap the Ayatollah? Is that what they plan to do? Take a couple hundred men, send them into Tehran, kidnap the Ayatollah in a few hours' time, and that's the end of it. And then President Trump is going to run Iran the way he is going to run Venezuela? I mean, is that what's going to happen here? So, you know, when people talk about this great success in Venezuela and what it says for what's going to happen in Iran, I kind of scratch my head and say, what are they talking about? So let's talk about the specifics of Iran. I have two sets of questions. Number one, what's the goal here? What are we going to do? It can't be the nuclear sites. President Trump has told us that he obliterated all of them in June and that they remain obliterated. So we're not going after Fordow or Natanz or the nuclear sites that we went after on June 22nd of 2025. So it appears that they're talking about regime change and creating chaos in Iran, breaking Iran apart. Because you understand when they talk about knocking off the regime, they don't have a replacement regime. And they don't have a replacement regime because they don't want one. They want to sow chaos. They want to do to Iran what happened to Syria, fragment it, break it apart. But first they have to do regime change. I think it's quite clear that even with all those military assets, if you strike Iran, it's not going to produce regime change. President Trump has said that what he wants is a decisive strike. That's what he tells us. He wants something decisive. He wants to decisively knock off the regime. You want to remember, he was talking about attacking on the morning of January 14th, the morning of January 14th of this month. He was talking boldly about attacking Iran. By the end of the day, he had cooled his jets. And the reason, one of the reasons he had cooled his jets was because the generals told him, his military told him, he couldn't win a decisive victory, even with all the military force we had in the region. So the idea that he's going to go in there, blast Iran with this armada that he now has in place and create regime change, I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't know anybody who thinks that's going to happen. There's no question. Yeah,
well, I'm sorry. I do know one guy who thinks it's going to happen. Watch this.
This is not that complicated. This regime has to go at this point. There's no deal. There's no agreement. President Obama tried that path. He led to continue their nuclear program. President Biden tried to do the same thing. This is not a regime that could be negotiated with. This is a regime that is going to have to be forced from power by the Iranian people, and the United States can provide support for that.
So it's not complicated, apparently. We just go in, we throw a few missiles down, bam, problem solved. What do you think?
No, but Danny, what he was talking about is what happened between December 28th and January 14th. That's what Pompeo was talking about. Pompeo was talking about us working with the protesters to finish off the regime. The basic game plan between December 28th and January 14th was for the protesters to create so much havoc on the ground. They were our boots on the ground, the protesters. They would create so much havoc that the regime would be threatened. Then on January 14th, President Trump was planning to come in, to swoop in with the American military and finish off the regime. But what happened on January 14th are two things, one of which I just told you about. On January 14th, the American military told President Trump that he could not score a decisive victory if he used military force. And the reason is that the protests had been shut down between January 8th and January 14th. Just very important to understand that. The protests were over effectively by January 14th, and U.S. military power alone could not topple the regime. And of course, that's where we are today. So the idea that this giant armada by itself, without protests, that's what Pompeo was talking about, can topple the regime is not going to happen. Now, the second point I want to make about January 14th, which gets into my second, let's call it basket of points. The second thing that happened on January 14th is that Benjamin Netanyahu told President Trump not to attack. Now, why was that the case? Because Israel could not defend itself. And Israel with the United States could not defend itself. You want to go back to the 12-day war in June, and you want to understand that one of the principal reasons that war came to an end after only 12 days was because the Israelis and the Americans wanted it to come to an end. The Israelis had discovered by the 12th day that they could no longer protect themselves in any meaningful way from the huge number of ballistic missiles that the Iranians were throwing at them. And furthermore, in the process of the United States trying to help defend Israel back then, this is during the 12-day war, we expended a quarter, 25% of our THAAD missiles. And if the war had gone on, we would have run out of THAAD missiles, which would have been disastrous for the national security of the United States. So we were happy to end the war as well. Well, if you fast forward to the present, Danny, Israel's situation is no better than it was at the end of the 12-day war. Israel can't protect itself in any meaningful way. And this, by the way, is why this potential attack against Iran does not include the Israelis. It took me a while to figure that out. I thought it would be the Israelis and the Americans acting as a tag team, as usual, attacking Iran. But no, it's the Americans alone who are doing the job. And the Israelis have been trying to convey to the Iranians they want to stay on the sidelines. They don't want to get involved because the Israelis don't want the Iranians launching ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones at Israel because they know what happened in the 12-day war. So again, if you go back to January 14th, when the Pompeo scenario played itself out, there were two factors that put the kibosh on Trump's plan to slam Iran on January 14th. One was what the generals told him, can't win a decisive victory. And two, Netanyahu didn't want a war. So fast forward from the 14th, 15 days later, January 29th, today, where are we? I don't see how the situation has changed in any fundamental way. I don't see how Trump can produce a decisive victory in the sense that he knocks off the regime in Tehran. And furthermore, and this is very important to remember, the Iranians have said to the Israelis and to the Americans, if only the Americans attack us, we are going to retaliate against Israel nevertheless. So I would imagine the Israelis are not terribly enthusiastic about seeing the United States attack Iran.
And okay, so, but see, that just raises a bunch of more really troubling questions. I mean, number one, it kind of looked like Pompeo was doing his own kabuki dance, and I want to talk about that in just a second. But what seemed to have changed in Trump's mind anyway, and one wonders who's advising on the inside, because he cooled his jets on the 14th of January, as you say, but then that was like, say, all right, well, let's get the rest of this armada there. And he was bragging as he was getting closer. And then once it got on station yesterday, he makes that statement there, make the deal, give us this big situation here, or this big give that we're asking for, or it's going to be even worse than it was before and all that, but worse than Operation Midnight Hammer. But as you say, there is more combat power in the region, but there is nowhere near enough to topple it, especially if you don't have any boots on the ground or sandals, if you're going to use the protesters. If you got neither of those, then just a bunch of missiles is just going to blow a bunch of stuff up. So as I'm asking you to do the impossible here. What do you think is in Trump's mind here? If he's still getting the same advice, both from Israel and from his generals, why are we at the precipice of war?
Well, I mean, this is a hard one to figure out. Sometimes I say to myself what he's likely to do, because he's, in a sense, boxed himself in. I mean, if you just listen to you talk over the past minute, he's, in effect, boxed himself in. So he has to do something. So I say to myself, what he'll probably do is something analogous to what he did on June 22nd. There'll be a handful of strikes, and he'll then be done after one day, and he'll declare victory. He's not going to topple the regime for sure. He's not going to do anything of any strategic consequence, but he's going to show that he's a tough guy, and then he's going to declare victory. The problem with that argument is that the Iranians are like a cocked pistol, and they've made it clear that if we attack at all, right, if there's any sign we're coming after them, they're going to retaliate full scale. That means, number one, they're going to hit Israel. Number two, they're going to hit bases in the region. And number three, they're going to close the Straits of Hormuz.
Well, and Gary, if you can put that that X post up by the foreign minister Araghchi, he used that exact analogy you're talking about of a cocked pistol. In what he said, that if there is an attack on us, and apparently any attack, our brave armed forces are prepared with their fingers on the trigger to immediately and powerfully respond to any aggression against our beloved land, air, and sea. The valuable lessons learned from the 12-day war have enabled us to respond even more rapidly, strongly, and profoundly. At the same time, Iran always welcomes a mutually beneficial, fair, and equitable nuclear deal. He's using language here that you think Trump understands, by the way, with the all caps and all that. I don't think that's lost. And which ensures a right to peaceful nuclear technology and guarantees no nuclear weapons. Such nuclear weapons have no place in our security. Such calculations have never sought to acquire them. And Gary, if you can now put that other one up there, this is what, when Trump says, take the deal, this is apparently what the deal is. Not that one. Sorry, the one with the three. Yeah, that one. Limit long-range ballistic missiles, halt nuclear enrichment, end regional support for armed groups. And there's no way they would do any of those. Every single one of those are essential to their survival. So it seems, back to your boxed-in analogy, first of all, that he has painted himself into a box where he said, do this or there's going to be an attack. They can't do what he asked. And then if they don't do what he asks, then now he has to do something. But now then their fingers on the trigger if they really mean it. I mean, this is a really cocked situation, if I can piggyback off your analogy.
Yeah. Let me just also point out to you, Danny, those are not all our demands. What we want to do is regime change. Right. Those demands don't involve regime change. We want to do regime change, number one. And number two, we want to break apart Iran. We want to do to Iran what happened to Syria. We want to wreck Iran. That's our goal. Now, the question is, why is that our goal? Is that our goal because Iran is a threat to the United States? No, Iran's not a threat to the United States. That's our goal because that's Israel's goal. And Israel and the United States are joined at the hip. And it's the Israelis who largely determine what our Middle East policy is. As I've said on countless occasions, the lobby basically owns, the Israel lobby basically owns Donald Trump. So we are beholden to Israel, and Israel wants regime change, and it wants to wreck, Iran. We are an existential threat to Iran. It is very important to understand that. Getting rid of their nuclear enrichment capability is not going to be enough to satisfy the Israelis, which means not enough to satisfy us. We are an existential threat. And that's why the Iranians have reached a point where they say, if you strike at us, even in a lighthearted way, right, we're coming full bore after you.
And Gary, if you could put that Wall Street Journal up there, it's not an empty rhetoric. I know a lot of people say, well, they're weak and they don't have that much power. And generally speaking, that's been true, which is why they haven't actually been a threat to the United States at any point, and why our security is not at risk here. But we see here, this is according to Wall Street Journal now, as of yesterday, Tehran has an estimated 2,000 mid-range ballistic missiles. And from other reports that I've seen, apparently those are very capable ballistic missiles that can reach across the entire region to include Israel. It also has significant stockpiles of short-range missiles capable of reaching U.S. bases in the Gulf and the ships in the Straits of Hormuz. Iran also has significant stockpiles of anti-ship cruise missiles, torpedo boats, as well as many drones that can threaten U.S. ships and, of course, bases in the region. That's a lot of firepower. If all you're talking about is defensive firepower, then they can do a lot. That's not going to – Iran would never, in my view, benefit from launching an offensive attack against Israel or the United States against with those assets. Because then once their missiles are expended, then they're powerless and they would invite destruction. But if they're attacked and they use that in a defensive counterattack, then it can exert extraordinary amounts of damage, which I think the intent is to dissuade us from starting in the first place. But I get the feeling here, and I'd like your view on this, that Iran is to the point now, because of everything that's happened over the last 3 years in particular, but over the last couple of decades generally, that they're like, there's no more value in self-restraint here and trying to not go too much in our retaliation. I think that they have calculated that this is an existential threat, and that if they don't deal with it in a heavy way now, they may get regime change later on. How do you see it?
I agree with that completely. I think what's amazing is that they haven't acquired nuclear weapons. If I were the Iranians, I'd go out and get a nuclear deterrent. I'd pay the price. You'll pay a serious price if you try to do that. That will not make the Russians or the Chinese happy. It certainly won't make the United States or Israel happy. But if Iran had nuclear weapons, we would not be doing these sorts of things to Iran, nor would the Israelis. The North Koreans figured this out. I laugh when I see the United States and even China telling the North Koreans they should get rid of their nuclear weapons. The North Koreans understand full well that the best way to maximize their chances of survival is to have a nuclear deterrent.
Right.
From an Iranian point of view, and an Iraqi point of view, by the way. But from an Iranian point of view, you want to have nuclear weapons. And the fact that they don't have nuclear weapons shows that they've been very foolish in the past. I want to be clear here. It's not in our interest. It's not in America's interest for Iran to have nuclear weapons. I'm not making that argument. What I am saying is that from Iran's point of view, it makes eminently good sense to have.
Yeah, and therefore, if I can piggyback on that, it makes it horrible sense for us to have put them in a position to where they may someday actually come to that same conclusion and say our only ability to survive is to have a nuclear weapons, where we pushed them in the very thing we claimed we wanted to prevent because of our actions. And I think history will not judge us well if it gets to that point.
Yeah, I agree with that. One other point, Danny, just talking about the Iranian threat to Israel, you want to remember that as a result of the 12-day war back in June of last year, the Iranians learned a lot about how to penetrate Israel's defenses. And actually, if you look at what happened over the course of the 12-day war, what becomes apparent is that the Iranians became more sophisticated. They learned the best ways to penetrate Israel's actually quite sophisticated defenses, which of course were augmented by THAAD missiles and by American defensive systems that were in the region. But the Iranians got quite sophisticated in terms of their operations against Israel. So they're going to be smarter this time at the start of the conflict, should it happen. Let's hope it doesn't happen, but should it happen, they'll be smarter this time than they were when things started back on June 13th of last year. And of course, once things get going, they'll learn again. You know, there's a real learning process that takes place here. And based on my experience when I was in the American military, both the Army and in the Air Force, when you talk about offensive missiles up against defensive missiles, I believe offensive missiles win every time. If you look at the cost exchange ratio in an extended confrontation between two sides, where one side privileges offensive missiles and the other privileges defensive missiles, the offense just has all sorts of advantages. This is why building ABM or SDI makes no sense. And what is President Trump talking about now? Building Golden Dome? The Chinese and the Russians should hope that he builds Golden Dome. It'll be throwing money down a rat hole. Be easy to defeat that defensive system. Offensive missiles always have an advantage over defensive missiles. And again, getting back to Israel, this is a problem that they face. And I'm sure the Israelis are very sophisticated when it comes to military operations, that they fully understand this problem.
Yeah, they do. And we don't seem to. We seem to be lost in the propaganda war, if I can be honest and say that. But we'll see what that ends up. We'll keep tracking on this. Listen, in the last few minutes we have here, I'd like to talk to you and get your views on something that's interestingly related, though it's a different topic. It is still related because I think that what I'm going to show you here, I think, gives a glimpse into how the elite in the U.S. think about foreign policy and where their objectives are and where, in my view, there's some real disconnects with reality. Yesterday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio testified before the Senate committee and talked a lot about the Venezuela operation. Afterwards, General Jack Keane was assessing some of the things that Rubio had said.
When we extracted Maduro, a brilliant campaign out of there, now we're dealing, you know, with the thugs that are left behind and trying to work transition government with them. And as of now, they're cooperating, and that's a good thing. We're cutting down the narco traffic that's going on and the criminal activity and achieving some of the stability, putting in some economic assistance for the people, but also staying focused on what the real goal is here. We don't want to get too comfortable with these thugs. We want to make certain that we're transitioning to a democratic form of government, get all the political prisoners out, and let people start to express their political views, let civil society begin to return, and let's put this place on a path to a democratic government where the people truly are electing the people they want in charge.
This, in my view, is something like another stanza of the Kabuki dance, of the Kabuki song, maybe. And it's just very little more than just propaganda, that we're, our real goal is the people of Venezuela, and we want to bring democracy, we want to have political prisoners, and we want to take this thuggish regime that we left in power here. As long as they do what they're told, they can stay. But then someday we're going to move on to something else, when everything is very clearly about extracting their oil and deciding what we're going to do with the money. What does that tell you about the state of American foreign policy today?
It tells you that large chunks of the elite, as represented by General Keane, and the neoconservatives more generally, are living in a world of delusion. I mean, as you said, we're not going in to Venezuela for the purposes of promoting democracy. Trump is not in the business of promoting democracy. Just go to Iran for a second. Is he talking about toppling the regime and creating democracy in Iran? No, he's not. Is he talking about doing that in Venezuela? No, he's not. In fact, all he did in Venezuela was lop off the leadership, and help promote the vice president to the presidency. The regime remains intact. And to the extent there was a possibility of making Venezuela a democracy by bringing in that woman who won the Nobel Prize.
Machado, Maria Machado.
Yeah. He nixed that. He dissed her. He showed disrespect for her. He's not interested in democracy. So I don't know what Keane is talking about. And also he's talking about narco terrorists in Venezuela and how we shut down that problem.
Yeah. The narco traffic has been shut down, even though there was almost no narco traffic from Venezuela to the United States. Other than that fact, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And the idea that this was a brilliant military operation, it might have been a brilliant military operation, but it was a minor operation. This is the point that I made to you before. We did not bomb Venezuela in any meaningful way. We didn't invade it, right? This was a giant kidnapping operation. And again, it was well executed. Nobody would deny that for one second. But no regime change, you know, no serious use of military force. The situation here is one where the elite, the foreign policy elite in the United States, especially the neoconservatives, which includes people like General Keane, still maintain a vision that involves regime change. And you want to remember, Danny, anytime you talk about regime change with an end result of democratization, you're talking about boots on the ground. You have to do social engineering. And Trump understands this. This is one of the reasons that Trump doesn't talk about turning countries into liberal democracies, because he understands that to do that, you have to do more than just knock off the regime. You have to go in there and do social engineering.
Yeah.
He understands, although people like General Keane don't understand, that that's a prescription for disaster. We've tried that, you know, didn't work out very well.
You know, it seems I don't know that it's so much the delusion of these folks with him saying that stuff as much as it is, a disrespect to the American people that I expect you guys to believe this, because I can't for a second imagine that Keane believes a word of what he said about democracy and, setting political prisoners. He could care less about any of that. He just cares about regime change and facilitating getting the oil out and looking to the next target, it seems to me.
You could make that argument, but one could also argue that people repeat these arguments enough that they eventually come to believe them. In other words, in the beginning, you may understand that it's just a mantra that's designed for public relation purposes. But with the passage of time, you repeat the message so many times that you begin to think it's true. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's not true with General Keane. He's been making these kinds of arguments for so long now.
Okay, fair enough. He may actually believe it. I'm not sure if that's worse or better, but that's just where it is. Listen, we really appreciate you coming on today. As always, thank you so much. And we'd recommend people go to John's Substack at mearsheimer.substack.com, where you can get some great stuff, and you definitely don't have to wait for him to be on our show every couple of weeks, although we love it when he is. So thank you so much for coming on, and believe me, we'll be watching this issue in Iran very closely, and we'll see if we can get you back on if anything changes in between now and the next time you're here.
For sure, Danny. It was a pleasure talking to you as always.
Thank you very much, folks, and we will look forward to seeing you at, I think Gary said, we got Doug McGregor at 3 o'clock today. He's going to be talking about some of the other issues that are going on in a different aspect of this. You definitely don't want to miss that, and I believe it's at 2 p.m. We have Patrick Henningsen, another favorite of a lot of the folks on our show, and he's going to be looking at some of the things from the Middle East generally, not even just what's going on in Iran here. Going to cover all the bases today. Don't want to miss that, folks. We will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. We'll be right back.